All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a closer look at a case out of Massachusetts.
Commonwealth versus Lyles, decided back in 2009.
That's right. And it was sent in by one of our listeners, so thanks for that. It deals with a topic that, honestly, I think is super relevant to, like, pretty much everyone, you know? What are your rights when you're dealing with the police?
Definitely. It's a question a lot of people have.
And the thing is, there's this gray area, right? Like, what happens when a cop starts talking to you on the street? Seems casual, right?
Right.
But at what point does that become, like, a legally binding detention, even if they haven't actually put you under arrest or anything?
That's the core issue here.
So we're going to use the details of this Lyles case to really get into the nitty-gritty of this, especially here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, this case offers some great insights into the nuances, especially when we consider Article 14 of the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights.
And that's key. Because, as we've talked about before, Massachusetts sometimes has its own, like, unique legal quirks.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It often provides even stronger protections for individual liberties than what you might find at the federal level.
Okay, so let's jump right into the heart of this case.
Yeah.
Tell me, what exactly happened to Mr. Lyles?
Okay, so picture this. It's April 15th, 2005, around a housing development in Boston.
Okay.
And the police have noted this area has a history of, you know, drug-related issues.
Right. So that's already a factor, I guess.
It can be. Yep. So we've got two Boston Housing Authority officers, both in plain clothes, and they approach Oscar Lyles. He's just walking by himself on the sidewalk.
Okay. So plain clothes right off the bat. That's got to be a little unnerving. I mean, how do you even know they're cops at first?
Right. It definitely adds a layer of uncertainty to the whole encounter. But they did identify themselves as officers and they showed their badges.
Okay, so Mr. Lyles knew he was dealing with the police at least.
Right. And then Officer O'Connor, one of the officers, asks Mr. Lyles for his ID.
That sounds pretty standard, right? I mean, cops ask for ID all the time, don't they?
Yeah. It's a pretty common request in these types of encounters. But here's where things take a turn.
Okay, what happened?
Officer O'Connor takes Mr. Lyles' identification, and without asking for his permission or anything, he keeps it.
He keeps his ID?
Yep. Keeps it to run a check for any outstanding warrants over the radio.
Okay, so that's the problem here, right? Holding onto his ID without asking.
Exactly. And you're right, that action, the retention of his ID without consent, it becomes like the central legal issue in the whole case.
So what happened next? Did they find a warrant or something?
Yeah, it turns out there was an active warrant for Mr. Lyles' arrest.
Okay, so then what?
So they arrest him based on the warrant, and during the whole booking process back at the station, they search him and find heroin and some cash.
So now they've got him on drug charges, too.
Potentially, but that's where the legal challenge comes in.
So I'm guessing Mr. Lyles' lawyers argued that all this evidence, the warrant, the drugs, the money, it should all be thrown out because the whole thing started with an illegal stop.
Exactly. Mr. Lyles' argument was that he was unlawfully seized the moment Officer O'Connor held onto his ID to run that warrant check, you know, without his consent.
Makes sense. And he's claiming this violated his rights, not just under the federal constitution, but under Massachusetts law too, right?
Exactly. He's saying this violated his Fourth Amendment rights at the federal level and also Article 14 of the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights. So he filed a motion to suppress all of that evidence.
Ah, the good old motion to suppress. Always makes things interesting.
Yeah.
So what happened with that motion? Did the court side with Mr. Lyles?
They did, actually. The Boston Municipal Court, the first court to hear the case, agreed with him.
Wow, okay.
They granted his motion to suppress the evidence, saying, yeah, you were unlawfully seized when the officer held on to your ID.
Interesting.
The Commonwealth, obviously, they weren't too happy with that decision, so they appealed it.
So up it goes to the next level. What happened at the appeals court?
Same story. The appeals court took a look at it, reviewed everything, and they also agreed with Mr. Lyles. They upheld the lower court's decision, saying that, yeah, he was unlawfully seized when his ID was taken and held without his okay.
Wow, so two courts in a row siding with Lyles. That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
But obviously it doesn't end there, right?
No, it goes all the way up to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC, you know, the top dogs.
Right, the big leagues. So what did the SJC have to say about all this?
They ended up upholding the suppression of the evidence, too. They sided with both the lower courts, agreeing that Mr. Lyles was unlawfully seized when the officer held onto his identification.
Okay, so this is big. I mean, three courts all reaching the same conclusion.
Yeah.
But what was their reasoning? Why did the SJC rule this way?
This is where things get really interesting, especially for law students in Massachusetts, because the SJC emphasized that Article 14 of the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights actually offers more protection, greater protection, than the Fourth Amendment when you're talking about what exactly defines a seizure.
Hold on, back up a sec. The Massachusetts Declaration of Rights, that's like our own mini Bill of Rights, right? Specifically for Massachusetts.
That's a great way to put it. It lays out the fundamental rights of people here in the Commonwealth.
Okay, got it. So Article 14 of this Massachusetts Declaration of Rights, it gives you more protection than the federal Fourth Amendment when it comes to unlawful seizures.
In this specific context, yes. The court really spelled that out.
Interesting. Okay, so how does Article 14 actually define when a seizure takes place? Like, in this situation with Mr. Lyles, how do they decide that line was crossed?
The SJC kind of reaffirmed the test that's been used under Article 14.
Okay, what's the test?
It all boils down to this. Would a reasonable person, looking at all the circumstances of the encounter, feel like they were free to just walk away? Like they could end the interaction with the police and go about their business?
Okay, so the reasonable person standard.
Yeah.
It seems like that pops up a lot in legal cases, right?
It does. It's a common way for courts to try to be, you know, objective, looking at it from the perspective of an average person.
So in Mr. Lyles' case, what made the SJC believe a reasonable person wouldn't have felt free to just leave? What crossed that line?
Well, there were a few things that contributed to their decision. You know, the officers showing their badges, that alone kind of projects a sense of authority.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then asking for his identification, that adds another layer. But the real kicker, the thing that tipped the scales, was that Officer O'Connor actually held on to Mr. Lyles' ID to run the warrant check.
Right, without his consent.
Exactly. The court said that this action, keeping his ID, it basically created an unspoken command for him to stay put.
It's like saying, we've got your papers, you're not going anywhere, even if they didn't actually say those words out loud.
That's a great way to think about it. And the SJC really emphasized how important a person's identification is in everyday life.
Right, like you need your ID for pretty much everything.
Exactly. They even said, quote, a reasonable person simply would not relinquish his identification to the police and continue on with his business.
So they're saying, look, if a cop is holding your driver's license, you're not just going to walk away and pretend everything's normal. You're going to feel obligated to stay until you get it back.
Right. And that feeling, that sense of obligation, that's what the court saw as the defining moment of the seizure. It wasn't physical. It was this implicit hold they had over him because of his ID.
So even though they didn't physically grab him or explicitly tell him he couldn't leave, taking his ID was enough to make it an unlawful seizure under Massachusetts law.
That's exactly how the SJC saw it. And since they decided that keeping his ID was a seizure under Article 14, which again offers more protection than the Fourth Amendment in this case, the next step was to see if the cops had a good reason, a legal basis for that seizure.
And what's the legal standard there? What do they have to make that seizure illegal?
They needed what's called reasonable suspicion that Mr. Lyles was involved in some kind of criminal activity.
Reasonable suspicion. So we're not talking about like beyond a reasonable doubt or anything.
Right.
Right? But it's got to be more than just a gut feeling, right?
Right. It's this middle ground. More than just a hunch, but less than probable cause for an arrest. The officers have to be able to point to specific facts, things they actually observed, that would lead a reasonable person to believe this person is up to something illegal.
So did the officers in this case have reasonable suspicion before they decided to hold on to Mr. Lyles' ID?
According to the SJC, nope, they did not.
Okay.
You know, the Commonwealth tried to argue that the area was known for drug activity, but the SJC made it clear that simply being in a high crime area, that's not enough for reasonable suspicion.
Right, right. Like, just because a neighborhood has a reputation doesn't mean everyone walking around there is a criminal.
Exactly. The officers needed to show that Mr. Lyles himself was doing something suspicious, something that would justify that level of intrusion.
So just walking on a public sidewalk in that neighborhood, that wasn't enough to warrant even that brief seizure that happened when they took his ID.
That's what the court said. The officers didn't give any specific facts about what Mr. Lyles was doing. He was just walking. And since there wasn't reasonable suspicion, they ruled that the seizure was unlawful under Article 14.
So they're really highlighting how Massachusetts law takes a stricter approach, offering more protection against these kinds of seizures than maybe you'd see in other states.
Absolutely. They even said that even if this initial encounter might have been viewed differently under the federal Fourth Amendment under Massachusetts law, it just didn't fly.
Interesting. So, okay, we've got this initial stop that's been deemed unlawful. What does that mean for the evidence they found afterwards? You know, the warrant, the drugs, the cash. Like, what are the practical consequences of that unlawful seizure?
This is where the exclusionary rule comes into play.
Ah, yes. The exclusionary rule. Always a big deal in criminal procedure.
It is. And basically, it means that if the initial stop, the seizure, was illegal, then any evidence they find because of that illegal stop is inadmissible in court.
So it's like the evidence is tainted, right? Like it's the fruit of the poisonous tree.
Exactly. You can't benefit from an illegal action. So even though they found a valid arrest warrant, the fact that they only found it after they had already unlawfully seized him by taking his ID, that doesn't somehow make it okay.
It's like they can't go back in time and make the initial stop legal just because they found something later on.
Exactly. The illegal action, the unlawful seizure, already happened. So everything that followed, the arrest warrant, the drugs, the cash, it all stemmed from that initial violation. And the court's not going to let them use that evidence against Mr. Lyles.
That makes sense. So what does all this mean for, you know, police officers in Massachusetts and for people like me, you know, just regular folks? What are the takeaways from this Lyles case?
Well, for law enforcement in Massachusetts, it sends a pretty clear message. If you're stopping someone on the street and you take their ID without their consent and you don't have reasonable suspicion that they're involved in criminal activity, you're likely looking at an unlawful seizure under Article 14.
So that simple act of keeping someone's driver's license or whatever, that can be the legal turning point.
That's right. It creates that sense of, you know, coercion that a reasonable person wouldn't feel free to just walk away.
And for the average person, what should they keep in mind?
Know your rights. You have the right to end a conversation with the police if it's consensual. You don't have to answer their questions and you can walk away. And if an officer takes your ID without valid reason, like reasonable suspicion, you can challenge that in court as an unlawful seizure.
And of course, you can always politely ask for a lawyer, right? That's always a good option.
Always a good idea. Never hurts to know your rights and exercise them.
So this Commonwealth versus Lyles case, it's not necessarily creating a whole new definition of what a seizure is,
right?
But it's giving us a really clear example of how these existing standards, especially under Article 14 here in Massachusetts, actually play out in a real-world situation.
That's a great way to sum it up. It's like a case study in how these legal principles apply to everyday interactions between people and the police.
Okay, so let's do a super quick recap just to make sure everyone's got the key points here. The takeaway from Commonwealth versus Lyles is that if a police officer in Massachusetts stops you, takes your ID without your permission, and doesn't have a good reason to suspect you of a crime, that's probably an illegal seizure under our state constitution, and any evidence they find because of that could be thrown out in court. Is that right?
That's the heart of it. It really highlights the importance of understanding the difference between a casual chat with the police and a situation where your freedom is being restricted, even if it's subtle. And it shows how Massachusetts law goes further than federal law to protect your liberty in those situations.
This is a really important case for anyone studying or practicing law in Massachusetts, for sure. It shows how much power our state constitution has in shaping the way these encounters play out.
No doubt about it. It reminds us that law enforcement has limits, and those limits are there to protect individual rights, especially here in Massachusetts, where we've got Article 14 looking out for us.
And for our law student listeners out there, I want to leave you with a thought to chew on. Think about this. How might this stricter interpretation of what a seizure is under Article 14 here in Massachusetts, you know, like we saw in the Lyles case, how might that affect the way police officers do their jobs? And how does it impact the rights of individuals compared to states where they might rely solely on the Fourth Amendment, which is, you know, maybe a bit less strict?
That's a great question. It makes you think about the bigger picture, you know, the balance between public safety and personal freedom.
Exactly. And there's no easy answer. It's a constant debate, right? But this case definitely gives us a lot to consider.
It does. Commonwealth versus Lyles provides a lot of food for thought about that delicate balance between police power and individual rights, especially during those street encounters.
Well, this has been a fantastic deep dive into Commonwealth versus Lyles. Really appreciate you breaking down all the details and the legal reasoning for us. And a huge thanks to our listener who sent this case our way. We hope you found this helpful and informative.
My pleasure. Always great to dive into these important cases.
We'll catch you all next time for another deep dive. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.
And know your rights.
Absolutely.